Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news with distinctly Australian flavour. Monday evening, and Edwin is with me, and what a way to start the show, Edwin.
Can't have that joy, Martin.
Very good. Got your dragon out and you know, your rabbit and everything?
Yeah, well, yeah, the dragon ate the rabbit, and the rabbit ate the fly, the dragon ate the rabbit, and I don't know what ate the dragon. But, you know, but look, the big question is, Martin, like, is the property market going up or is the property market going down? That is the first question. The second biggest question is it the year of the rabbit or is it the year of the cat? Come on. I mean, these are two very ominous questions that the public and society needs to answer.
Well, let's go to the which year it is, because of course last week we said it was the year of the rabbit, but is it?
Yeah, look, it is with the Chinese side of things, it's a year of the rabbit, but with the Vietnamese community, it's a year of the cat. So it's both years. Both happy birthday to them. But they're both ominous years, and it's going to be very very exciting. 2023. I also noticed that this is episode number 4. It's the episode of death.
Okay, right. We'll be a little bit careful. And of course, we saw Albo there at the front of the queue, right, leading the charge, as it were.
Yeah. Look, the fix is in, Martin. The fix is in. We've got the RBA wants to drop wages with the companies to drop people's wages to save the economy, they say. Albo wants to bring in 300,000 new migrants. And what the hell was Albo doing in Burwood handing out those red envelopes? Dusty tells me she thinks it was first in line cards, jump to queue cards for first home buyer grants that are going to come up closer to the election. What do you think?
Well, he certainly had a little basket and he was giving something out, so it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, you know what they say, the more red envelopes that you give out, the more prosperity for the year. So maybe that's, someone's saying it's had a vote cards for the next, for the state election, but I'm going to go with Dusty. I think it's, gifts, special gifts for a special community so they can jump the queue for the first home buyers grant.
Well, you know, red being a lucky colour, I suppose, you know, that could well be.
Yeah, and what do you think of our mate Phil? I mean, he's just putting it out there. He wants, wages to basically take a step back. I've updated that headline, by the way, and send it back to Lindsay David and put their RBA wants politician cut. So I'm sure that's going to keep the economy more afloat than cutting down normal people's wages.
But you know that the RBA got a pay rise of 4.6%. So if don't do as I do as I say.
Of course, Martin. What do you expect? I mean, and when Phil's on $1 million a year salary, I'm sure he could spare a few hundred here and there. I mean, look, it is what it is, Martin. It's just the world gone mad. We said it was going to be 2023. We told our viewers last year that 2023 was going to be the year of the hustle, and you have to hustle. We said that there was going to be a shrinking of industries. I'm seeing that. The real estate industry, once again, is back to where it was in 2019 with the low listing numbers. So I can see that that industry is going to shrink. My prediction is, you know, 20 to 30% of real estate agents will leave the industry altogether. Offices will be shut down because without no sales, no commissions, you can't pay the bills. And some of them are already struggling. I've posted out on Twitter how salespeople in the industry, friends, colleagues, and acquaintances in the industry are already driving Uber as a part-time gig. Some are cleaning of the evenings. They're picking up the side hustle, and it's the year of the side hustle for many. If you want to survive, you know, white collar worker by day and blue collar worker by night. There's nothing wrong with it. Because this is what you got to do in order to keep on paying those mortgages. You have to keep putting food on the table, and everybody around the world is feeling the same pinch. And other than politicians and bureaucrats and the powers to be.
Right, and is it true that it's going to be painting on Australia Day?
You got me there, Martin. Look, definitely. It's going to be because this property needs to be finished. And it's going to be a pet-friendly rental. So, we just got to work. And look, I'm not out there with the boys on Australia Day because I'm anti-Australia Day. I've got no choice. Really, just got to
get it done.
Just got to get it done. As you can see, the banner behind me, I'm Patriot. I'm a supporter of Australia and have been, and I think Australia is the greatest country in the world. From day one when we got off the plane and we drove across the Glasville Bridge, I was so impressed with it. And to me, I've never turned my back on Australia, nor will I. It's the best country in the world.
But interestingly, of course, China is not necessarily putting Australia at the top of the list, are they? New Zealand is coming first.
Oh, mate, come on. This is, because it's because of your videos, Martin. Because of your videos on New Zealand, on the property market in New Zealand, how they're struggling, and you just can't stop talking about the issues that they're facing. So the CCP decided to open up the tour industry for the local tour industry. So we've got the local tour guru of China put out this article, and New Zealand's on the list. Although it comes in, I think, 25th on the list of that of the group that are allowed to leave the country as in tour groups on the 6th of the 2nd, 2023 is the date that they will be allowed to travel. New Zealand beats Fiji, Cuba, and Argentina. So there's still the 25th on the list, but it's a friendly destination, Martin. It's a friendly destination, as you will see that basically based on the Australian policies or the stance that Australia took and is still taking in a way against China. They're just saying that it's not really friendly, and they've put us in the not too friendly basket with the US, Japan, and South Korea. So there you go. So, but look, Dusty tells me that they just really want to say they're really concerned about the New Zealand property market. So all the tour groups and all the tours are going to go to New Zealand first before they think about saving our market. Because they've got a fair bit of money in there. And, of course, those tourists will become what? They'll become ghost migrants. They will disappear.
Absolutely. And maybe it's also something to do with the fact that they've just swapped their prime minister out in New Zealand, So another opportunity.
Look, come on. They were always friendly. They were always friendly to New Zealand, to China. Is she going to be a spokesperson or some working with WUF, I'm told, or so? I mean, that's just rumours, but who knows?
And as far as the local WeChat chats are concerned, there's a few things going on there that's also quite interesting.
Well, mate, look, no business. There's no talk of business. Nothing, only red pocket money rain. As they're basically just sharing red envelopes. The more red envelopes you share, and businesses are really just sharing red envelopes with their workers, and just because they want to, it's the superstition, it's the thought that the more red envelopes you give out, the greater chance you've got of being having a successful year. So they've got to give out a lot. Don't forget, it's an ominous black rabbit. It happens every 60 years. So they've got to really cover all their bases and give out as many red envelopes as they can. So all quiet on the local WeChat front, Martin.
Oh, very good. Okay, and I guess the next thing we should then talk about is the Perrottet effect, right? Because it's still a rumbling on, isn't it?
Matt, it is. You know, it's the heading should have been "Fool me once, I deserve it. Fool me twice, I'm an idiot. Fool me three times." Yeah, you know, you've got to. You must be a politician to trick me so many times. But look, Mike Yander put out this article this morning. I thought it was interesting. He hits the nail on the head. Obviously, it's no different to what you and I have been saying for many years. It's not just been recently, but it's been many years that we've spoken about this, and I've been vocal about this since the early 2000s about government grants and how that doesn't solve the issue that first-time buyers have had for decades of jumping in or getting in. It doesn't give them a ladder, doesn't give them an extra run on the ladder to climb into the property market. If anything, it stifles and it cuts those runs away from them to really get in. So, New South Wales land tax and stamp duty debacle again shows how politics trumps policy. They just can't get it right. I mean, I've got my options. I've got my say on what needs to be done, but they won't listen because it's jobs for the boys and there's too much shenanigans going happening in the backswing, as you know. Policy failure for not only this term or last term, it's policy failure for 2.5 decades. It hasn't worked and they continue to do it. Why? So that you've got this policy failure. And in effect, as I call it, the current one, the Perrottet effect, meets low listing numbers, and what do you get, Martin? You've got FOMO. You've got an undercurrent of FOMO that has crept in, and it's sending some property prices in certain parts of Sydney skyrocketing, almost back to 2021 figures. Selling agents are beating their chest, but you got to give it to them because they're getting a lot of people at the open houses, and they're creating that urgency. And if the listing numbers continue to be low, as I'm somewhat I'm predicting that they will remain low till the second, till the first, for most of the first half of this year. And as you spoke with Tarek on Friday. People are waiting for that pivot at the end of the year. People are waiting for that, the pivot in the RBA. So, if you can hold on to the property, if you can wait that long, they'll wait because who wants to give away? In their minds, especially the retirees, they're not wanting to give away 15-20% of the value of their property because at the end of the day, they've got to go back in the market. One of the sectors of the property property industry that hasn't gone down in price are retirement villages, retirement homes, and accommodation for retirees.
That's right. Well, there's going to be ever more demand for that given the demographic shifts. But I just wanted to say, Michael Yander's comment here about the state got an economic Frankenstein and the opposition's plan is even worse, and both sides of politics playing politics. And I just want to remind you again, Edwin, last year the Productivity Commission came out with a very detailed report on housing and property in Australia, and they concluded that none of these incentive schemes actually helped with housing affordability. In fact, it made it worse, and the benefit flowed to people who would have all probably bought anyway, and it doesn't actually hit the people who really need the help. And yet they still go and doing it. It's just absolutely crazy.
Look, it is. And even in previous times when the market was was steady as she goes, when the market was going up, when the market's going down, but any time that the government does this, it creates another barrier from first-time buyers to jump in. And the reason why I say that, Martin, is because it's also an incentive for investors to come in, investors by way of in this round, where we're seeing a lot of flippers coming in. Yep. Buying low, relatively low, and you know, sprucing them up and flipping them. This because it's the low lying fruit. They're picking them up, or properties that need a lot of work, and they can do it because that's part of the game anyway. So and these are the properties that are being shunned away, or one would say that overlooked by first home buyers, because after you buy a home, you really you can't afford. The bank isn't going to lend you any more money to go and renovate it. You've got to basically have that cash on hand to renovate it. So it's very, very difficult for them. And with the cost of renovating and the sheer, the supply chain issues that we've been talking about for God knows how long now, and the issues of prices going up, and the fact that we're not getting tradies on hand, it's just create that perfect storm, for these poor bastards to really just go back and live with mum and dad until such time that they can jump in. Because what the government's given, all it's doing is create inflating prices. Michael Young points out there, and this has been happening for decades. But it's interesting how so quickly put out. On the weekend after the opens, after the round of opens on Saturday, put out just a quick text to some of the colleagues in different parts of Sydney, and I asked them how were your opens today, and whether to ask them if they were as hot, as busy as last week, because of the low listing numbers, right? This is pure more because of the low listing numbers. And these are the answers that they've been giving me. Yeah, mate, attendee numbers are really good, averaging 15 groups per open home. Now, this agency, this particular agency, it's in the Blacktown LGA, and they conducted 7 open inspections. This is just one of the groups in the agency. They've got 4 groups in the agency, and this is one of the groups that conducted 7 open inspections, 15 in each, on average, 15 in each agency. Which one have you got up there now? The second one. The second one is a little bit quieter this week, mate, but still some great numbers in a few markets we cover. It's another part of Sydney. And in the last screen there, he only had one open house inspection. But the attendance, again, the same numbers. This is in part of the Shire. They had 16 groups in this part, and he had similar to last week, 16 groups. And this is a home that I believe he's guiding between 1.75 and 1.85. So what we get on the ground, Martin, it's crazy, because I think it's a combination of, as I said, not just one thing, but it's many things that are driving this. And the ones that we've been pointing out in our show over the different shows is in the Perrottet effect, the low listing numbers, and the simple fact that there's more properties on market that need a lot of work than don't, and therefore a lot of people are gravitating to those and paying. A lot more, and therefore that creates that undercurrent in a bit of a, people think of, call it dead cat bounce, call it a dead elephant bounce, call it whatever you want to call it, but nevertheless there's that undercurrent that's supporting that continual fall. And until we see greater numbers on market, I don't believe things are going to change much, other than things are only going to get worse in that first time buyer bracket.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, I've spoken to a couple of people who are first-time buyers coming to the market, and they keep tripping over developers who are also eyeing up larger properties with subdivision possibility, right? And they keep getting outbid because, of course, the maths for a developer when they can subdivide into 4 is completely different from when you're buying a place to live in. So they keep getting effectively outbid, not by investors, but by developers who are actually seeing the opportunity of subdivision because of the planning regulations that allow subdivision in all sorts of areas where you wouldn't have done previously. And if you can put 4 units or terraced apartments or villas or whatever you want to call them, right? Little teeny weeny properties squeezed onto a plot. But that means you can make a lot more, even with all the costs of materials and costs of developing it, relative to a first home buyer. Now, that's something that nobody's really talking about, but to me, that's a very important element here as well.
Yeah, because again, because of the government initiatives and government incentives, and therefore, when you do a reverse feasibility on the development, you take that into account, and when you do your numbers, they end up with any upwards of 27%, 30% return on their investment, which is not a bad investment. And if you can turn over one of these projects every 6 to 12 months, yep, you're laughing. Other than that, they're also, what we're finding, along with your thoughts there, Martin, is we're finding that the bigger developers are stepping back into the smaller, as you say, the smaller subdivision, duplex sites or triplex sites, or your four villa sites, because they don't want to take on the bigger burden because of the supply chain issues, because of the cost of labor, because they can keep it tight, they can keep it steady, and they don't have to worry. Like I said, when you start factoring in building anything above an apartment complex, be it 30, 40, 50, nothing too big, apartment complex, and you've got to factor in now that you've got to be paying anywhere upwards of $520,000 per lot, no matter where you're going to build in Sydney. I mean, you're taking such a huge risk on the construction costs, and the fact that you may not be able to complete in time for the sunset clauses of the contracts to, before they expire and so forth. You've got a lot of issues. So therefore, they are stepping back, and a lot of these developers that your people have spoken to and that we speak to, these developers aren't being bank funded. They're buying this stuff in cash, so you don't want to stand toe to toe with them at the auctions. Yep. But the other thing, Martin, that we've been warning the people is watch out, because once the Lunar New Year and celebrations are gone and dusted here, the local Ouija chatterers are going to come out in force, mark my words, and they're eyeing out specific suburbs, specific type of properties that can be literally converted from a 3-4 bedroom house with one or two bathrooms to potentially a 6-7 bedroom, 8 bedroom house with 4-5 bathrooms, and they can rent out each apartment. They're the investors that we're talking about. And you'll also get some of them will also be involved in flipping.
Absolutely. Well, it just shows you how much contention there is in the property sector. And just to add to the contention, of course, there was this article this week where a Sydney couple earning $240,000 revealed a struggle to find a rental. Can you believe it?
Yeah, look, there's a lot more to that story. There's a lot more to that heading. It's an eye-catching headline, so you've got to go with it. I spent time reading it and trying to understand a bit more of the background, but it was and then obviously we start thinking about the reasons why with this couple. I mean, when you read the full story, you start to understand, as we've spoken about, and unfortunately looks like some of my colleagues read my tongue-in-cheek piece that I did years ago with Domain as to my preferential treatment to tenants with pets and with kids. Yep. So it looks like they've must be popular with them. And they've taken that on board well and truly, unfortunately. But look, I think it's this nothing burger thing that we spoke about when Dominella was put out or was talking about the rent bidding issues. It's all happening behind closed doors, and we as agents, the industry, as property management team, can't ask for offers between or can't give indicative guides or this or that, that's all. But if you as an individual want to offer more for a property, there's nothing to, there's no legislation, there's no law that says that you can't. And quite frankly, property managers will take that on board. And they know it. They know it because of the squeeze. So this couple are looking in a very competitive area, in a very competitive price point. And you know, one of the comments there in the article, in the in, you know, from the Reddit piece, was that property managers basically saying, well, you know what, you're earning collectively $240,000 and you want to lease an apartment, what, for $650 a week? maybe you should up it a bit and look for something, you know, that's not as competitive above that. But you know, they've got their reasons for wanting to get into that price point, and unfortunately they were only offering $5 or $10 more for the rental. I can assure you, in that price bracket, my colleagues that are still in the industry, that I still have in those industries, in those areas in property management, you know, they're getting offers of anywhere between $20 to $40 more per week in what they consider to be high rents in the first place. So offering 5 to 10 ain't going to cut it.
No, and it's all worth contextualising it because, of course, we've got quite high demand for rentals at the moment. We've got properties not available because of the floods and everything else, and you know, a lot of other dynamics going on. So there's a bunch of reasons why the rental sector is pretty tight. And we also know that the total stock of rental properties is about 20% down from where it was, because some investors have actually just given up and walked away. So there's a smaller supply, significant demand. And as you say, you need to understand how to play the game here. And if you don't play the game, you probably won't get a property.
Well, that's right. And that's something that our viewers need to also understand, Martin, like what you said. It's, you know, we got the beginnings of mandatory of legislation in changes to the rental property standards from basically 2020, and it's been playing out over in the backdrop. It's been playing out slowly, and now the Fair Trading are picking up the game, and there's a lot of complaints and a lot of issues happening back. So investors basically, the older investors are basically, either they already got rid of their properties, yes, or in the process of getting rid of the properties, because they're saying, "Yeah, this is just too much. This is puts too much onus on us," and the property management teams, coupled with that, is the bad property management teams that have come up the ranks over the last 1.5 decades. Because as I said, we lost since 2013. We started losing great property managers, because they were being, treated like dirt in the bigger offices. And they said, for what? I'm being treated like dirt for, back then, for $42,000 a year, when my sales colleagues that do Jack Squidley are earning above 100K. So they did the transition. We lost them to the dark side. And the good property managers, and the majority of property managers now, I would say the demographic of the majority of property managers in Sydney would be between the ages of 18 and 25. So they've got very little experience. Some are good, but some are the majority are very, very poor. So they can't handle this legislative changes that stand. So investors themselves, landlords themselves can see that they're going to get themselves in a lot of strife because of bad property management services, so they've opted to already sell or in the process of selling. And as you said, Martin, then you've got the natural disasters in New South Wales, which has driven a lot of people to the bigger cities. Because there's I think somebody told me Lismore, there's some poor bastard, months and months later, still living in his car.
Yep. Well, there are still people down on the south coast still living in temporary accommodation from the bushfires. You know, that was, what, 2 or 3 years ago now.
Yeah, exactly.
Remarkable. Yep.
So when you're not, when the insurance companies or the governments haven't been supportive, and that goes to both sides of the fence, they haven't been supportive of the people that weren't insured, weren't fully covered. And it's not a matter of back then, I recall, there was a lot of issues with a lot of complaints because insurance companies were saying, well, we're going to give you replacement value. But the thing is also the LEPs and the standards for those areas changed.
Yes.
So right. they, you know, and the cost of materials skyrocketed. So it's so yeah, you got your you may have got your $400,000, but that would only build you half a house. You can't build to the old standards. You've got to build to the new standards, and that puts a lot of pressure. So you've got all this also all this migration from the towns and the struggles that they've been going through and the issues that they've been going through with again with natural disasters, the pandemic, jobs, the whole situation, but also now we've also coupled with that is the interstate migration, and I dare say we're taking on more than a legitimate leaving, so that has put huge strains on the rental sector, and then I still believe that there's a lot of apartments that are still being owned by overseas investors that are still vacant.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move on and talk about numbers, because there is a little bit of movement now in terms of listings, right? So this is the 23rd for New South Wales or Sydney, 15,648, right? And if you compare that with the previous 15,104, so we're starting to see a bit of a lift now.
Yeah, look, the last couple of weeks we're seeing on average around about 500 new listings per week. What's more appealing for us is obviously the house listings, and from last week to this week we've seen an increase of about 300 new homes, but it's still not rising as quickly as we would like to see. But again, the things start to change mid next month. Obviously after Australia Day, when the kids go back to school and so forth. So that's when we'll still see a change. It's a bit, Super Saturday, this Saturday for auctions. So that holiday spirit sort of is by the wayside now, and it's back to business. Agents will are well and truly back in business now to basically go out there and get listings. So I hope that my predictions are wrong, but based on what we see on the ground and based on what we hear, what we're hearing, and what people are, the agents are telling us, it's going to be a hard slog for them for the first two quarters and for the first half of the year, because people that were thinking of selling, as I said, they're not really keen on losing what they're losing that 15-20% of the value of their property, and these are more in the areas of where retirees are holding on to the older, bigger properties, Martin, as opposed to the ones that are in mortgage stress that bought into the on government hearsay from 2020 to 2022.
Yeah, no, very good point. Let's look at Melbourne quickly, because it's a bit of a similar story. So on the 23rd, 23,566. And if we go back a week, it was at 23,075. So again, a bit of a rise. But interestingly, there's still quite a lot of property for sale in around Melbourne, even now.
Yeah, it's surprisingly still, you still have 12,000 homes, over 12,000 homes based on the domain figures. And but the apartment numbers have really dropped. It's only 50% of the house numbers. Mm. So a lot more people opting out of homes. You probably have a better idea as to why. I can only think because a lot of people chewed a bit more than what they could chew, and over the last 2-3 years, and they're in a lot of misery now with rates going up.
Well, there's a bit of misery and also this investor problem. There's a lot of older properties coming on which were investment properties, and it goes right the way back to the cost of trying to maintain an investment property, meet the latest regulations. And then with interest rates rising, of course, which means the mortgage is going up dramatically, the rentals aren't following enough. So effectively, the net yields, the really critical net yields, are continuing to fall. And there are more and more postcodes now in and around Victoria, particularly around Melbourne, where in fact in net cash flow terms, people are losing money every month, every quarter, every year. And only if you can see significant capital appreciation would you hold on to the property. Well, at the moment, property is going backwards. So effectively, you're losing on capital and you're losing on cash flow, which is why more investors are saying, oh, we're going to get out. And interestingly, quite a few people in my survey are thinking, well, I'll list quickly and try and get out before everybody else does the same. So it's a bit like lemmings, right? The first lemmings are running for the exits. The question is, how many more will follow them?
Yeah, and I guess the one of the points that stand out from that, Martin, is the point of the legislative changes that have happened. They're a lot tighter with the rental side of things, the property management side of things. They're put down in South Wales, but New South Wales is going to get there, so it's going to be interesting. I mean, some make the argument, well, if you've got landlords selling. And opening up more properties for sale means that more first home buyers will also jump in. But I also make a point. I don't know what your survey say, but there's a lot of potential first home buyers and people, young people that would be or waiting on the sidelines as first home buyers that are still living with mum and dad. I can give you two of my kids. One up to last year was. We're still living with mum saving, and the other one that's 26, still living there with mum as well saving. He was 29 when he came into the market because apart from all the benefits of living with mum and dad and all the comforts that you have, homemade dinners and so forth when you get home from work, and they did the washing for you. Well, you've got the other, obviously, paying very little to help you save for that deposit. So I know whether your surveys pick up on those numbers, Martin, but I'm seeing that trend unless the numbers show up, that trend will only remain there. And therefore you're not going to it just has that sort of that's something that's not talked about in the main property arena.
Well, it's interesting because the statistics show that there were quite a few number of people living in smaller family units through COVID, right? But that's reversing now, and in fact some people are going back to live with parents now to try and actually, as you say, accumulate a bit more to buy something. The other point, though, is a lot of the properties that we're talking about coming on the market, ex-rental properties, need so much spent on them to bring them up to standard that when you actually do the math and say, well, what's the cost of the property plus the renovation or, you know, the fix-up that you need to do, that puts it way out of the range of many first-time buyers, particularly with the limited borrowing power that's now there, because borrowing power is down about 30% now on average for first-time buyers. So what you're finding, I think, is that a lot of the properties that are coming on are more expensive than first-time buyers can actually access at the moment, which is why they're saving hard and living with parents.
Yeah, and then, as I said, earlier on, once you borrow from the bank, unless you've got the extra cash on hand to do the renovations, it's harder to buy the properties for a lot of first time buyers to buy the properties that need that extra bit of work for many reasons. Not just the fact that the bank's not going to lend you anymore. There are other factors also. Materials and labour.
Absolutely. Let's look at Brisbane just briefly because it's not a dissimilar story, really. 23rd with 4939 listed. And if we go back a week, 4834. So not quite such a large uplift, but still trending in the same direction.
Yeah. Queensland's the sleepy part of the Australia, isn't it?
So, well, they're still on holiday. They won't come back till after Australia Day. Well, there, I think up in Queensland. Yeah. I was emailing a couple of businesses up there, and they said, well, we'll be back beginning of February. You know, we'll just take the extra week or two.
Yeah, I thought that don't come back until after Easter. Yeah,
Well, maybe, I don't know. Now, let's talk about the wackier than a conspiracy theory. We've touched on this, but it's always coming back to it, right? He should be sacked only in Australia.
Yeah, David Lindsay did put that out. Did you read the background? Did you read the whole thing there, that article, Martin?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Look, as I said, the fix is in. They've really got to stop. They're really trying everything to stop the market, the property market, sliding any further. And on top of that, yeah, you've got your 300,000 migrants. I think that in itself is going to lower wages anyway. I'm hoping so anyway, because bloody hell, we're paying $600 for some trades for WeChat chatterers to work on different projects. $600 a day, and they want 50% in bloody WeChat wallet the other wallet that they have, and also in cash. So it's hard. It's really hard to make it work. So bring it on. Bring it on so that we don't have to pay as much up front. Look, but it's sad the way this is happening. It's sad. It's just one just throws everything up in the air and says, what the hell?
Absolutely. And then the other thing we've got here is this very interesting, more on the effect, right? The misleading price guide, right? And Tarek's saying, underquoting, with a lot of it about.
Yeah, well, that's right. I'll put that tweet out because we've been following. Don't forget, the Black 10 LGA, it's just the gift that keeps on giving. Now it's the area that just keeps on giving, and I'm trying to tag as many people that on my tweets that I would hope would pay attention to all the shenanigans. Don't forget that my prediction number 16 is that underquoting will be bigger and better in 2023 than it was in 2022, and people thought that I was crazy. But they ain't seen anything yet, and so we've been following this particular listing. And I put out receipts, right? I put out receipts. I put out the back end information, comparable sales, what it was bought for. It was guided at 790 in 2016, Martin. 2016, the agents that were selling that house in 2016 were guiding it at 790, and they're running a guide of 800. You're telling me that what potentially the agent's telling us that the market slid back to 2016 figures? I mean, give me a bridge and I'll sell it to you. It's just one of those things. So I put this out, facts and figures, so that the Dom Perrottos, Victor Dominello's, Fair Trade in New South Wales will start paying a bit more attention, as we were talking earlier on before the show. It's stuff that's happening on the ground that people need to see, not these bullshit articles of fictitious figures and stats and numbers that people are pulling out of God knows where, makeshift surveys of, I polled.
1,000.
or 10, five out of 10 eat Weet-Bix for breakfast. And therefore 50% of the population eat Weet-Bix for breakfast, blah, 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 sort of BS. So, and this is it. This is wackier than a conspiracy theory, but is it a conspiracy when it's the truth? No, it just is going to become wackier. And unfortunately, folks, 2023 is not only going to be the year of the hustle, but it's going to be the year of the underquoting for agents, because when agents get desperate, when selling agents get desperate, they will do whatever it takes in order to earn that commission. And unfortunately, they will put their license on the line just to earn that commission, because, they think that they've got no other choice but to do that. But you know what, Martin? After having close contact with people that we've been also assisting in helping them prepare their homes. You know, vendors also have got a lot to answer for this, because they've been led and they've been led by the agents, and they let them. And this is, it's shameful on both sides.
Well, it's a mutually reinforcing set of things which are misleading each other. And it's interesting, here's one that you put out as well about listing inquiries, right? Because the point is that the inquiries are down, the transaction throughput is down, and that's going to put a huge, huge pressure on agents, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And this is what we spoke about last week, and this is what I'm saying. And they will do whatever it takes. They will buy the listing in order to get it on the market. They will tell you that they will get you... If CoreLogic, the back end of CoreLogic says that the property, the range, or based on their on their calculations, it's worth 1 million, because the majority of agents use that CoreLogic back end information as the gospel to preach to the potential vendors. And yeah, they'll say, but you know what, if we do this, this, and this, we're going to get you 1.1 million, right? So they're buying the listing. They're telling them Furbies, because then after their job from day one when they get it online is to give them all sorts of reasons as to why the market's changed and what things are done, how it's conditioned the vendor to sell out. So that's buying, that's called buying the listing. And then you've got your underquoting when they start guiding it low in order to get to create that urgency. So that's what they'll do, Martin. That's what they will do, and they will tell you all sorts of purposes. When you go to the open houses, they'll tell you, you'll ask them, if anything happened by way of material fact that they have to inform you of, and they'll tell you, no, nothing, it's okay, you know, she's good, she's all right, it's all okay. And as I shared with you as well, with regards to that house that I, because we wanted to make a quick offer and we didn't have time to get the building inspector there before we made a quick offer. I jumped in under the house and saw potential issues, and I wanted to take some snaps to show the agent of the potential termite issues. Hence we lowballed the offer based on that. They'll blatantly tell you in some of my other tweets and some photos that I've shared, Martin, where I've asked the agent, has the property, had any recent flooding issues, given the fact all the rain, and given the fact that the concrete slab sits, 20 millimetres from the ground, when it should be 150, no less than 150 millimetres from the ground, the distance, and the agent will, we'll look you straight in the face and said, no, mate, no issues, no, nothing's happened here. You walk in and the tenants were there, and first question asked, have you had any water issues in the property in your tenancy? Oh, yeah, a couple of months ago we had water running through the whole lounge, stuff like that. So, they'll do whatever it takes to get the listing and to get the sale to make the commission. Otherwise, they're in a lot of strife, because of low listing numbers, which means low sales numbers.
Yeah, and of course, so you can have water features in the wrong place as well as in the right place. Gotcha. And last week you showed us this one, and I just want to recap, right? So, this is a typical, right? There are lots and lots of offices in a relatively small area, so there are lots of people quite desperate to try and actually make a sale happen. And so, they'll do pretty much anything they can to try and actually to get that sale.
Yeah, so this is four suburbs, right, that encompass one postcode in the Shire.
Yep.
This is just four suburbs, right, and they've got roughly 30 selling agents.
Yep.
Right, in four postcodes. Now, in that, I think I mentioned last week, I'm not sure whether I did, but the agent tells me there, that my mate tells me there, that there's 10,000 homes in those four postcodes, right? And they've currently only run it, they currently have 27 listings on market. So what does that tell? That people, agents are starving.
Absolutely.
He himself wanted to retire, but he can't retire. He's prolonged his retirement because he's still got a bit of a mortgage, because he's a bit of a redhead, has been all his life, and he likes old muscle cars. So anyway, I keep on telling him, sell your cars and you'll get out of debt.
Well, just sort of taking that further, because this week here's an example of buoyancy in a particular market.
Yeah, look, this is King's Langley, and this is the Paratay effect. This is it. This is firsthand. And what the agent writes, what he told me was there. You know, they had 76 groups or so.
Yeah, 76 groups. Yep. Open. Yep.
31 in the second open. The auction was on it was a very short campaign. They got 16 registered bidders and 36 bids, I understand. It got 125,000 or so more than what they were expecting to get for the property. But look at the crowds, Matt. This is King's Langley. This is your top end of your first home buyers market for the Blacktown LGA.
Yep. Well, you say it's the Blacktown effect again, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is. And this, again, this is that belt in Blacktown. You're in the Liverpool area as well. We're seeing the lower parts, the very very lower parts of the Shire, where properties are still somewhat attainable around between the 1 and the 1.2 million. So you've got all these things because of this low supply of properties coming in, money being gifted by the government, and as I said, God only helped the first home buyers. After the Chinese Lunar New Year, because God help them, because they're gonna come in hard. They're gonna really come in hard, because the shit that they will do to properties that you and I can never think of doing, but they will do it.
Absolutely. Well, before we get your final thought, I got two quick points to raise. The first is, last week we were discussing this idea of the auction and the bid and the cooling off period, etc., and people were a bit confused by what you were saying. So they would like us just to explain slightly more the circumstance where effectively this cooling off period is or isn't relevant, because basically the confusion was, well, if it's not an auction, how can you have a cooling off period or not? So can we just explain that a bit more in a bit more detail?
So an auction contract, right? An auction contract states that you, when you're buying a property at auction, you waive your rights to a cooling off period, right? So you proceed at an auction unless it was previously organised with your conveyancer and their conveyancer or solicitor. You have to stump up the 10% deposit, right? So if you renege on the contract, if you rescind the contract because the valuation didn't come to the $1 million that you paid, and you stumped up $100,000 by way of deposit on the day, you lose your $100,000, right? That's the way. So you really have to be very, very careful, as we've said, when you're buying at auction and when markets are going down, because valuers, you may think it's worth $1 million, your neighbor may have told you it's worth $1 million, your Uncle Jack probably told you it was worth $1 million, so you went out because you fell in love with the property and you paid $1 million, but the valuation came in at 950, let's say. So you got two choices. You walk away from your 10% deposit, or you beg, borrow, and steal the extra $50,000 to make up for the value for the price, because the bank's only going to lend you $950 less your deposit, right? So that's what's at play at an auction with a no cooling off. Under private treaty or any other ways of buying, under private treaty, the contract state that you've got a 5-day cooling off. Now, what that means is, if an offer has been given, and the vendor has accepted that offer in order to solidify the contract, there has to be offer, acceptance, and consideration. So the consideration in this case is what's called the 0.25% deposit, or a quarter of a percent, right? So that's what you stump up for purchasing the property, which is a quarter of a percent. So if 1% is 10,000, so you stump up to 2,500. So if in that process of your cooling off, right, there's the only party that can rescind the contract is the buyer. The vendor is locked in. When they accept it, they take the consideration, the vendor is locked in. They can't rescind the contract, only you can. But if you rescind the contract, all you lose after you do your due diligence and the valuation comes in at $950 as opposed to the million that you offered and it was contract, you can walk away, right? You just walk away. You just say, no, I don't want to proceed. I'll walk away from my $2,500. So that 5-day is in your pro forma documents that your contract has started. You can ask for a 7-day, or even a little bit longer. So that's does that explain the what you're
yeah. And but then the final point is, but if you as a prospective purchaser, you could actually then play by the auction formulation if you choose to, in other words, going harder earlier and waive your own cooling off period, right?
Okay. So I'll give you an example of what happened last week.
Yeah.
Right. This will explain. So the property's on the market with a guide of 1.1 to 1.15. Right. So I inspected the property. I told our client the issues because the vendor's agent said there were no issues. I inspected the property thoroughly myself before we even engaged a third party building and pest inspector, so I already knew what was wrong with the property potentially, and he was going to renovate it anyway, right? So I said to the agent when I inspected the property and I took some photos under the house to make note. And I said, mate, you've got a lot of issues, obviously favouring my client's position. You know, you've got to sometimes elasticise the truth. So I said, look, these are the issues, blah, blah, blah. So my client is prepared to make an offer of $950,000, taking into consideration these issues that we can see in the property. And not only that, but he's prepared to waive the cooling off period and offer what's called a 66W, right? 66W certificate, which is basically you're waiving your cooling off, you're more or less buying it under auction conditions, right? Yep. So you've waived your cooling off.
So the point there is that the vendor then can't walk away.
No, the purchaser stumps up. Yeah, the vendor can't walk away if they accept. But the purchaser gives the vendor and the agent that security that no purchaser is going to offer a 10% deposit and walk away from it when it's not under an auction campaign. You know.
Yep. Yep.
So it's more of a posturing and more it's solid. Now, obviously, we have to be very careful. We have to be consider all the facts before we go ahead and do that.
Yep.
Now, look, this particular client, his LBR is really he's only borrowing the equivalent of something like $300,000. So to make up. Yeah, to make up that position of the 950, the rest is in the rest is in the bank. He's got the stamp duty, ready to go and so forth. So it really gives you you only do that when you know that you're not going to have an issue with finance. And even if the valuation came in at, 900, which would be rare, given the fact that comparable sales in the area are selling at 1.1 million with similar issues anyway. That was the thing. But look, and that's and we actually got it for a bit less than that, because they didn't take our offer. They went with a much higher offer at the time, except with a cooling off period. The sale fell over because the purchaser found out that they got a professional building pest inspection done, and this came up with the same issues that I pointed out that the agent in the owner denied that were there, and they pointed out that, and that buyer fell away, and then we came back in and we offered less than 900 and got the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's interesting because your sort of tip for the day was to know your limits, and this is a good example, isn't it, of knowing your limits, knowing how to play the game and knowing where you can and where you can't go. And in the current environment, that's a really good advice point, isn't it?
Well, that's right. You've got to know your limits. Now's not the time to take the risk. Physical, physical. I've always been very much a risky character, so I'm always taking risk, but I've got to be measured now. I fell off a ladder, off the third run of a ladder the other day, holding onto some rafters, and it brings home the thought that the what if, you're old, it takes longer to heal and so forth. So you've got to know your limits, and now's not the time to take those risks, not in the current conditions that we're in, and more so economic risk in buying a property, because of those things that we spoke about. Because unless you've really got all your ducks in a row and you're 110% sure that should the valuation come in lower, you can stump up the difference. Valuers are not giving you 5% leeway on the upside, because you got emotionally caught up in the in an auction process. If anything, they'll value down. So yeah, you've just got to know your limits and don't proceed unless you know that you got all your facts and all your ducks in a row, and make sure that it's all measured and you've set your bars. Otherwise, it's very, very risky.
Absolutely. Good advice, Edwin. Thank you once again. And as always, some really, really important messages there for those people that engaging in and around a property at the current environment. And as we keep saying, this year is going to be a very interesting year. So know your limits and make sure that you do the due diligence and all the other things you need to do to make sure you don't trip up and trip over in this current environment. So thanks once again. And we'll do it all again next week, hey?
Let's do it again, Martin. And get past this this week, and looking forward to next week, and hopefully with better news. But I know that one thing for sure, that it's going to be wackier than today.
Absolutely. It's going to be wackier. We can be pretty sure of that. Take care, everyone. See you soon. Bye-bye.